Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your host, TB Scouting MMA, and
the Guru, back again for the first pay-per-view of 2024. You've got UFC 297, Sean Strickland defending for the first time his middleweight belt against South African Dricus du Plessis, and as well, you've got the vacant women's bantamweight championship up for grabs. You've got former title challenger Raquel Pennington taking on Myra Buena Silva in what should be certainly an interesting clash of styles. Before we can get into this unbelievably Canadian pay-per-view, we've got a fantastic guest in the building. If you're a fan of our show, you've certainly seen him before. And if you're a fan of MMA Twitter and winning money, hopefully you've seen him before. John Kelly, DFS, make sure you're following him. If you haven't checked out his fightnumbers.com that he's got rolling right now, that's unbelievable content. Make sure you get over there. Check that out. John, what's up, brother? Good to see you again.
Yeah, appreciate the nice intro there, boys. I don't know if I can live up to that, but I'll certainly do my best. Always fun to chop it up with you guys, whether we're in person fighting over some pizza or just on your podcast here talking fights. So either way, ready to get after it.
I'm sorry, what was that you said?
There you go.
It's on John Kelly always. You don't say. It might have been an inspiration. I think it was intuitive. But what I do need to do is get Mr. John Kelly a nice pizza when we meet up in Atlantic City for the March 30th card.
However,
before we can get into that, as you might have seen on the slide before, like we said, from fightnumbers.com, please make sure you're checking out this amazing paid service, giving you amazing stats and analytics for not only DFS, betting, everything MMA related. Mr. John Kelly putting together an amazing product. Check that out and make sure you're subscribing here. Live every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Best bets, the best guests, always free picks. You can find us on Picket if you want to see some bets. Bet MMA, Instagram, X, I guess, if you want
to
say
it. That's where else you can listen to us now.
Where else
you can listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So, I mean, if there's a third, fourth platform that we should be on, let us know. But I mean, those are the major ones, right? We're here on YouTube and Spotify and Apple. That's the three.
Hell yeah,
right there.
You know, we say the best bets, we say the best guests, always free picks. But how about the best community out there? Also, you guys are great, always giving us inspiration. Give me your favorite TB nickname for this card. I need to know it. Guru, maybe will like your nicknames better than he likes mine. So we'll see what happens. But always with the best guests. Thank you, Daz, for letting the people know, because if you're not familiar, that's what Chronic Combat does. And we wouldn't bring on someone for the first pay-per-view of the year unless they were as upstanding and as good a breakdowns as Mr. John Kelly himself. Now, keep an eye out for Dana White's Contender Series, because the Don might make an appearance, but we won't talk about that right now.
Always got to watch out for him.
You got to look out for the Don. But here we go. What you people came here for, we've got UFC 297. Sean, the American Psycho, or Tarzan Strickland versus Dricus Still Knocks du Plessis. Oh, man, we got a banger of a matchup. Minus 125, Sean Strickland, plus 105, Dricus du Plessis. Oh, man, I smell a crazy round one. And where does this thing finally settle? For me, man, quite simply, before I waste all y'all time, Dricus du Plessis just seems like the guy that's the better athlete. He's got a bit more freak, you know, fast twitch explosion. And when I've seen Sean Strickland face guys like that before, in Alex Pereira, Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos, even when he's getting wrestled around by Kamaru Usman, if he's the much worse athlete in the cage and someone that can kind of match the skills, then great. You know, he's probably going to get finished or beaten to a resounding decision. The one question I have, Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland and his unrelenting pressure, how are you going to look if this fight goes into round two? How are you going to look if this fight goes into round three? And if we're getting there, I'm starting to look and scramble for the Sean Strickland live bet button. But for me, plus 105 on DraftKings. Guru helped me out earlier, but I'm going to recommend playing the Dricus du Plessis round one or two finish prop. Don't get specific. Don't get cute. Just take the finish. Round one, round two, call it a day, and then live bet Sean Strickland if we get past there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can even get Jiu-Jitsu plus he just by finish in general is at plus 140, which is basically his money line on a little bit of steroids. But when you're looking at this fight, you're just wondering, right, what can Sean Strickland do to extend the fight, right? You see him try roll with punches. It's kind of his style. It doesn't seem like the rolling with punches is a positive strategy here, right? It doesn't seem like you can take many of those, if any. He's going, you know, Dricus and Robert Whittaker are kind of going even pace for pace. Rob's actually kind of outpacing him maybe a little bit, trying to keep up with Dricus. But as that first round extends out, the damage is just accumulating to the point that Rob falters and he's getting beat down for that last 30, 45 seconds. It's concerning when you see someone like Sean Strickland, because it's the same breakdown we had for the Pereira fight, which we were on Sean as a dog because we're like, oh, you know, if he can just MMA this guy, right? If he could just get his wrestling going, if he could push him against the clinch, yeah, till he's like this and sleeping. I think that Dricus is going to pressure forward, obviously. And I think he's going to really give Sean a problem. The big cage actually works in Strickland's favor, in my opinion. But I'm on Dricus here. Money line seems good enough to me. You know how I'm a slut for plus money. I just really love Dricus. This is the last thing I'll say. I really love Dricus's interview. He sounded, I know this sounds crazy, he sounded like a champ. Just his whole mindset, his preparation, the way he was talking about his family flying out to see him fight from South Africa, the way he's approaching the weight of a nation, like how he feels South Africa wants him to win, it just seems all positive to me. John, what do you got? I'm really curious about your thoughts here.
Yeah, this is one I kind of struggle with because I definitely lean towards Strickland, and a big part of that is sort of expecting the fight to get to those later rounds. And that's where I really am confident that it would favor Sean Strickland down the stretch. But I'm also very aware that Dricus du Plessis is a very dangerous wild man in those first couple rounds, kind of what TB was alluding to there. But I also think that du Plessis, like he's probably got a path to victory grappling, maybe potentially sneakily. But I also think if he's unable to do that, he's going to gas himself out even faster. So it's really tough for me to back people that I know probably will fade in 5-round fights. Like it's going to be really tough for me to back them on the money line. Whereas Sean Strickland, I know he's got great cardio. I think I trust his durability even more than du Plessis as well. Which maybe that's a hot take, but we've seen du Plessis finish multiple times. We've seen him hurt as well multiple times. I know he's been able to push through the cardio issues in 3-round fights, but as that fight gets extended, if this does make those championship rounds, I don't know, man. I think I would really worry about him. So it's just one of those things where Sean's going to have to be aware of how dangerous he is early. But I also think that Sean plays he's very good defensively, especially at range, where du Plessis is a guy who basically like is going to just dart in throwing like 6-piece wild man combinations. Like, I'm not sure that that's going to work against the defense of Sean Strickland. So it's like, I definitely lean towards Strickland, but it's not one that I'm like planting my flag. I know there's a lot of people planting their flags on the main event this week. I think Sean Strickland wins. I think there's probably some value on Sean Strickland. I'll probably end up betting him, but it's not going to be like a large bet for me. It's more of just like a process bet. Like, I'm going to bet on the guy with better cardio and I think better durability, better striking, can keep the pace up for 25 minutes if he needs to, and then hope that he doesn't get finished in those first couple rounds, which is certainly possible because he's fighting somebody that is so dangerous in du Plessis. But I'm going to side with Sean Strickland. So I'll be on the other side for the main event here against you guys.
I think you raise a ton of excellent points. And it's honestly, you said one of the biggest things that why I've been vacillating back and forth on this fight so heavily. And you're right. If the fight extends out, I don't want any part of Dricus. And my point to TB, which I was going to say earlier, he said, oh, if it extends out a little bit, I'm going to want to play Sean on the money line. live. Like, I think you have to do a pre-fight. Like, lately, the odds live, especially when they know the narrative, they switch it immediately. I think you got to take a stab on those round props before the fight starts. Round three, especially. Because that Brunson fight is horrible. And it's why I was so confident in taking Robert Whittaker. I'm like, this dude's going to fade. Come on. And now I don't want to overcorrect the wheel. So there is more work to be done. I feel like I got the best of the line that I could, and I can cash out if I need to. But wow, what a tough, interesting fight. What a great clash of styles. Eric Nixick, and that's the last thing I'll say.
I'm absolutely shocked that Guru refused to reference this once I brought it up, given that he was the one that pointed it out. Are you not seeing the cauliflower ear of Dricus du Plessis on the screen?
I didn't realize the magnitude of what you feel about it, but you can
Mr. John Kelly brought up the idea that Dricus du Plessis might have a sneaky grappling advantage.
And
I think he does. I think he's going to be the much stronger guy on the mat, and I think that makes a big difference here. Strickland used to be 170. I don't know how Dricus makes 185.
Yeah, he's huge.
That's a factor that a lot of people aren't even really considering, is that once these guys face off, yeah, I mean, what's the advantage really? Like, what? Like, is there even really a height or reach advantage? But
no,
you see these guys stand next to each other? By God, I think Dricus du Plessis is going to look another weight class bigger. And if he doesn't, hey, I'm wrong. But this guy has a lot more power, and you can't just roll with the punches against this one. So I'm firmly on the Dricus side. I have a couple of units out there.
You guys are
and
sharp.
I'll look to throw down like a round 1/2.
I love it. I got to play those round props early. That's my big thing.
Also, pre-fight, you could just do Strickland round 2 and Strickland round 3. I don't think this fight makes the fourth round.
I think somebody's got to go.
Famous last words. But
somebody's got to go.
All right. The fight that I have probably some of the most conviction on this card. We got Raquel Rocky Pennington, Mayra Chitara Bueno Silva. Man, I'm going with Cheetos. Mayra Bueno Silva. I really think that she's got all the tools here to cover Raquel Pennington like 2 times over. I think her calf kicks are going to be great against the heavy boxing jab. And if this fight gets into the clinch, it's going to be MBS style chopping up her opponent. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about the Saudis.
Whoa.
We got Mayra Bueno Silva going to be chopping her up in the clinch with elbows and knees to the midsection. Rocky generally has the clinch advantage in her fights. Not this one. Mayra Bueno Silva going to be the much better Muay Thai fighter. I think she's going to be stronger. She's younger, more athletic, lands with more power, has more finishing potential. I think the real question, as the books have lined it, is this fight going the distance or not? I think that's the only interesting aspect of this fight. I think Silva wins this fight no matter what. It's just a question, does she get it by submission? I don't think she gets a knockout, but is it submission or is it a decision? That's kind of the way I'm leaning. But listen, I got Mayra Bueno Silva. I got the money line. I'm feeling good.
Yeah, I'm totally with you here. You've got somebody in Raquel Pennington who has taken a year off at now 35 years old. And she was never necessarily the most athletic individual to be fighting in the octagon to begin with. And you've got someone here, Mayra Bueno Silva, who honestly went out there and surprised me and, you know, finished Holly Holm. You know, no contest. Don't you take your Adderall, girl. Not allowed. Definitely helped you cheat. So that's a sarcastic. Glad that they took that. Made it a no contest. She obviously choked her out, right? Doesn't bring my bet back from betting on Holly Holm stupidly. So what do I care that she gets to keep the win? Just to do that in general to somebody that has been in there as long as Holly Holm, I think is really impressive, even if people think she's completely washed. You know, you look at who she's beat, and it's not necessarily anybody great still. You know, having that Misha Tate fight would have been good. That was a canceled fight. But, you know, Lena Landsberg, Stephanie Egger. Yeah, I don't know. It's certainly a difference of level of competition, but I just think her violence aspect is – if you're overlooking it, I'm not really sure how you could be, because the submissions are going to be there. And ITB already highlighted it's probably my favorite thing about the fight. Is how does Raquel Pennington win fights? And it's by clinching people up against the cage. And she's not going to be able to do that here with the Muay Thai specialist in Silva. So I like Silva. We got in at the money line. I got minus 150 and minus 170, I think, is still out there. Minus 175 DraftKings at the moment. So shop your lines. And you're right, TB. I think the also one of the very interesting parts is, does she find the finish or not? I kind of lean like she's going to. Five rounds, I think she finds it. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. Definitely not as much conviction, I'd say. Unlike you, TB, this is probably the one that I'm least excited for, to be honest. Like, I know it's a title fight, so it's like, whatever. But I'm just like, I'm not a Rocky fan. Like, she has that boring Holly Holm style. Like you mentioned it, clinch him up against the fence, like pop a couple shots, you know, and then just kind of cage stall a lot, maybe mixing a takedown. It's just a very, it leads to a lot of pretty boring fights. Now she is winning fights, so that counts for something. She's been on a 5-fight winning streak. One of the least memorable winning streaks, I think, in the UFC, but you know, she's fighting for a title. So respect to her. I think, like you guys mentioned, Bueno Silva is certainly going to be the better submission grappler in this fight. You mentioned the leg kicks as well, which I think could play a factor. And even though she's never been historically somebody that is aggressively pursuing the takedowns, like if you expect Rocky to clinch up with her enough times, like Bueno Silva could not only take her down, but she could also like just pull guard on her. So I think there's going to be opportunities for her to grapple here. Wouldn't be shocked at an early sub, like you guys mentioned. Even if it goes 25 minutes, I think Silva could still win a decision. But I also think that that's probably what Pennington needs, is for it to go 25 minutes and maybe edge the fight 3-2 if Bueno Silva starts to slow down, something like that. So, I mean, I can kind of see multiple outcomes here, but I definitely think all of the finishing upside basically is on the Bueno Silva side. She's definitely the one that is still at least upward trajectory as far as her career goes. You know, 4-0 since returning to the bantamweight division, hasn't fought there since her fight on Contender Series. And now you mentioned just beat Holly Holm, even though it was a no contest. So I think there was a camp change there to ATT as well, a couple of like a year ago or something like that. So she's just been looking a lot better, whereas Pennington's just always kind of been that like boring grinder, low volume, you know, that style of fighter. Like, I just think basically all of the upside is on Bueno Silva. So I'm with you guys on this one. I think she gets the belt here.
And I love that you're with us on that. And the one thing I'd like to add, it's a little outside the cage stuff, right? What has Raquel Pennington been doing? Well, her girlfriend, Tisha Torres, UFC fighter, has spent the last year and a half or so, maybe even a little longer, being pregnant and then having their child. So what has she been up to behind the scenes, right? Has it been, you know, busy being a new mom? I think that's a very important thing. And what is Myra Buena Silva doing? I mean, she's, like you said, moved to ATT and living in the gym.
Yep. Yeah,
I get it. I mean, the question is, can Rocky win a decision over Silva? So I don't see her finishing the fight. I just can't envision her outlanding her safely enough to do so. I've seen her, you know, marked up a bunch of times, giving up control or being outstruck. So just about the level of fighter Rocky's facing. All right. Now we move on to our next fight here. We've got the Haitian sensation, Neil Magny versus proper Mike Malott. +280 Magny, -355 Mike Malott. The market's slowly correcting itself from -400. We're finding greener pastures at -355. Listen, I understand it from a from a recency perspective. Like, Malott, definitely, whenever he fights, he's pulling off an exciting finish, whether it's grappling, using the outside trips to get there, impressive arm triangle finishes, or just absolutely rock'em sock'em robots with guys on the feet until he gets the ghillie finish as the guy shoots desperately. You've seen Malott kind of finish fights in every which way, knocking out Mickey Gall even clean on the feet. Either way it goes, I could see him having success against Neil Magny. The real question is, like, if we see you a little bit tired after round one with Adam Fugit, and then it's round two and you put everything you could on Neil Magny and you couldn't quite get the finish, well, then what? I mean, round two of Neil Magny and Ian Garry, Neil Magny's holding on for dear life to Ian Garry's back for a solid minute in round two. Is that not a potential thing that could happen in this fight? I don't think the outside trip little hip toss is going to work for Mike Malott in this spot against Neil Magny. But I could totally see him landing enough calf kicks, putting on enough damage, and just putting Neil Magny in a bad enough spot where it doesn't matter what happens after round one. My problem is it's minus 355 on Mike Malott against a guy that's just faced way better competition, 4-4 in his last eight, and the losses come to guys with much better experience than Mike Malott. So if he could do it to Phil Rowe, who can outmatch him in size and youth, why can't he do it to Mike Malott? Where, I mean, listen, Neil Magny is going to be 2 inches taller, 7-inch reach advantage. It's enough to make me pause and not throw Malott in a parlay. That's basically how I'll put it. My official pick? It's probably Mike Malott, and it's probably Mike Malott by, like, submission. But at the same time, is there not some value on the, you know, the absolute veteran and OG who, I mean, he's pretty tough to finish. I mean, Shavkat took a while to get there, right? So what do you got here, Guru?
You're all over, man. You're on point tonight. Did you take some Alpha Brain or something? That was a beautiful breakdown.
I'm trying to present both sides here, and you know, I'll give you guys, I'll let you guys take the lead on a couple of
those. No, it was excellent. Excellent. I think when you look at who Neil Magny has lost to lately, and you think about what the, like, the public perception might be when you continue to look at his lines. Oh, Neil Magny plus 230 again. Oh, Neil Magny plus 280 again. God, this guy stinks. He's getting finished. He's losing fights badly. He's fighting Shavkat Rakhmonov, Ian Garry, and Gilbert Burns. These guys are top level. I don't care if you guys want to hate on Ian Garry. I mean, he's a top 15 fighter in the division. I mean, through and through.
Huge. He's also huge.
Huge. Well talented. Gilbert Burns should be, you know, right one win away from a title shot. And you've got, I mean, he's just lost to the best guys. So how much is Mike Malott in that category? And that's why I'm so excited for Saturday, because we get to find out if he is or not. And that's really the main question. The way he gets a takedown on Johan Lioness, I mean, good Lord, that's so unimpressive. He just takes it, like, the dude falls over and can't get up. Neil Magny is going to, you're going to have to work a lot harder. And I'm not sure Mike Malott, A, has the most output, or B, even throws enough calf kicks, right? He was a coach. Seems to be a smart fighter. All everybody says that trains around him is how good he is. So he has to prove it this weekend and alter his game plan and kick the shit out of those calves. I'm not sure he will. So I'm interested to see what'll happen. You're right, TB. There certainly is value on Neil Magny here at plus 280. Really interested to see the fight. If he just gets finished early, you know, knocked out in round one, I mean, the dude's shot. And that happens too. But he's lost to the best of the best. So we're going to see right now. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I don't know, boys. I'm buying the hype here in this matchup. I think Mike Malott absolutely finishes Neil Magny, and I think it comes in the first round. This is a guy who's very explosive, not just on the feet, but he is a very slick submission grappler as well. Most of his wins have come by submission, a lot of them in the first round. The biggest concern with Malott is in the striking. He does get very sloppy. He's one of those guys that is super hittable. We've seen him busted up before in previous fights as well. But he's usually able to push through that and eventually get the fight to where he needs it. Outside of his power, I mentioned the chokes. That's what's going to be big here against Neil Magny, who has been kind of a willing grappler in most of his fights. And this dude constantly puts his neck in places it doesn't belong. He's been submitted 6 times in his career. I honestly think Malott, like, this is kind of like, yes, it's like a step up because Neil Magny's a veteran gatekeeper. Like, I totally get that. But it's also like they know what they're doing. They gave him Neil Magny because Malett's probably going to have multiple opportunities here to snatch up the neck in front of the home Canadian crowd. And I think that's what happened. So I got Malott here. I think he gets it done inside the first round. For those that play over on Prize Picks, the significant strike total for Mike Malott is 32.5. I expect that to move before Saturday. I like the under. He's only been outside of the first round twice in his career. He's never gone over that total in any UFC fight. Like, if he finishes in the first round here, I have a hard time seeing him land that many strikes here. But yeah, I like Mike Malott. So I guess I'll I'll hop on and just build up that hype train a little bit longer until we just get a different stylistic opponent. Because I do agree with you guys. There is holes here that can be taken advantage of. I'm just not as confident that Magny's going to be the one to do it at this stage in his career.
That's fair. I understand that perspective too. And realistically, it's, well, if Mike Mellott's not finishing it in round one, then you're not feeling great. So a minus 355 instead of parlaying that, you could do round one sub for plus 225. Take a smaller investment on it for the same type of payout you'd get for parlaying him to other people. That's the way I'd look into it. Does that make sense, or would you just take like round one by itself?
I mean, I haven't checked numbers yet on props. I'd wait till it opens up on other books, because you could definitely get a better price, I think. But I would say, for those ones where it's kind of like overemphasized, like everybody thinks he'll finish in round one, so you're probably not going to get value in that. A lot of times the value there is to take the round two submission prop and just hope it somehow gets out of the first round. I'm just saying, like, based on the numbers, like if the first round is plus 225 or whatever, round two is probably like 600, 700, something like that. So that would probably be the way that I would do it.
Mellott round one is plus 165, just the round one prop itself. And if you wanted Mellott round one submission, that's plus 225. The round one knockout is plus 450.
I kind of think the round one or two at minus 150, even though it's chalky, it gives you that extra round of protection.
You're talking about the round grouping?
Yeah, round grouping. Mike Mellott to win in round one or two. No method. Minus 150.
Minus 150.
So you're taking minus 355. You're getting minus 150. And, I mean, if it's in the third round, you're not feeling great about yourself. Let's be real. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can go pretty heavy on that ticket and then hedge out with a Neil Magny money line, because it's
nope. You could just do fight to start round three is going to be plus money, because over 2.5 is plus 154. So if you really needed to hedge out, which, I mean, like, come on, I'm not telling you to bet your bankroll, but if I'm trying to give you a bet suggestion for every fight, sometimes you got to lay some chalk. So Mike Mellott round one or two minus 150, you know, like $15 to win 10. Don't risk your night's bankroll on it, but if you need a little something on every fight, and you know, grandma's couch is like right there, and there's definitely a couple dollars and maybe some change, like, just dig in. You're going to find something. And minus 150 won't feel so bad when you're in round three and Mellott wins the decision. You feel like
that's insane. That'd be really funny.
Yeah. Listen, the official pick's Mike Mellott. I'm just trying to see if there's any.
Yeah. That's definitely what I also wanted to bring home too. Like, I already happen to have Mike Marley in two parlays with him at minus 300. And I'm picking Mike Mellott, but I was just, there was a part of me that sketched. And that's the part I wanted to highlight, I guess, because, he's not as high level, like in terms of high confidence, in terms of
it's picks. Always like, impossible until it happens.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a great line, any action. I appreciate that.
Well said.
Dirty Reg agrees too. Hey, guys in the chat, appreciate everyone leaving their mark here. Make sure if you haven't already, throw a like. Doesn't cost you anything. Please subscribe. Same thing, doesn't cost you a dollar, but we appreciate anyone and everyone here. Let us know you got any good TBA nicknames. I gave you a little for Strickland, but I got a feeling we got some good ones coming up.
I hope not.
Fair enough. We got Chris the Action Man Curtis versus Marc Andre Barrio, the Power Bar.
They got their own good nicknames, don't need your shitty ones.
Listen, if you got a good nickname, you won't get bestowed a TB nickname. It's just the rules. If you have a bad nickname or you don't have a nickname, you better fucking watch out. I'm coming for you.
Well said.
But so Chris Curtis here. Listen, man. Here's my issue with minus 198 on Chris Curtis. When has you ever known Chris Curtis to win on volume?
Yeah.
Against Rodolfo Vieira. He won on distance strength. Yeah, no shit. But if you're going to take Curtis inside the distance and you can get plus money, I understand it. The issue is that Marc-Andre Barrio, he's got a really high pace. He's got a great clinch game, can throw to all three levels. I think he's a little bit more diverse in his striking than Curtis, but Curtis is a little faster. He's a better counter striker. I understand the favorite line. I don't understand laying his money line at this point. If you got in at a better line, great, but Talk about someone that gives me mush vibes. What about the guy that's deleting his Twitter because he can't take the talk of the public? Like, I don't know. As a minus 198 favorite, I just can't touch it. I really can't. Once again, Chris Curtis inside the distance. If you really think that the power bars got, you know, the chin made of, I don't know, whatever the same stuff that the chin of, like, you know,
Chuck Norris,
like JP buys, stuff like that. You know, like, if you think he's got that type of vibe going on, then yeah, sure. But like, how many guys has Chris Curtis faced and like not knocked out? Right. What if Phil Hawes didn't have the worst chin in the world? It would be 100 strikes to 30 over three rounds. Right. What if, Adolfo Vieira couldn't take him down, but that guy can't strike. Can you give me a good argument for Chris Curtis minus 198? Go.
No, I mean, not really. Not when you could have had him at minus 150. I can't really make you that argument. But, yeah, I feel like Chris Curtis is somebody that could really not necessarily win the moments here and win the minutes here. I think Marc-Andre Barriot is the guy that's going to end up winning the minutes with his pace and obviously trying to push up against the cage. It's just whether he's going to be successful in doing that. Chris Curtis is somebody with good footwork, good movement, and I mean, really crisp boxing. And he'll, you know, willing to work the head and the body. And I'm just not sure of Marc-Andre Barriot's durability in terms of, yeah, he got knocked out by Chitty in 13 seconds, which was terrible. But I'm not really sure who he's fought and beat. Like, you look at his wins and they're Abu Azaitar, Dalcho Lugambula, Jordan Wright, and Julian Marquez. Like, Julian Marquez coming off a long layoff, too. And his best,
you don't slander TB's doppelganger.
Yeah, everybody's your doppelganger. And
I'm very generic. What can I say?
There you go, generic TB. And his best win is his last one versus Eric Anders, who is a clinch monster, as TB put it. And he got really sleepy because he gets tired. So Marc-Andre is the power bar. He doesn't get sleepy. He's going to keep striking. And every time that Eric Anders had to stop being a clinch monster, he got beat up. So that's how that happened. Andre really leaves himself open to be countered. And I feel like Chris Curtis has stolen the minute so many times in the UFC. He really could do it. And that is the problem. But you're right. Minus to 2-1 favorite, minus 200. No way. Not in on that. I'm good on that. So, no. Yeah, I think if Chris wins, I like him more by knockout. The decision is going to be way sketchier, especially in Canada. So that's where, if you think the fight's going the distance, I certainly understand if you like Marc-Andre Barriot. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you guys said there. I mean, I honestly wanted to flat out pick Marc-Andre Barriot. I couldn't do it because... and to give him a nickname for UTB, we'll say Marc-Andre Homer Simpson Barrio. I don't know if that's a good one, but he kind of fights that way. But the reason why I could see him struggling here is just because he's a guy that needs to get inside and really make the fight dirty. You know, landing those big nasty elbows in the clinch, like you guys mentioned, he did that against Anders. He did that against Julian Marquez as well. And I think he could have success doing that against Curtis. I'm just not sure if he's going to be able to get inside and make the fight dirty, fight in the phone booth against Chris Curtis. And if he gets stuck at space here, that's where I think Chris Curtis can kind of outclass him, because Curtis, I'm not the biggest fan. You mentioned sometimes the volume isn't there either, but he does have power and he is a technical boxer. So I think the power counter shots could be there against somebody like Marc-Andre Barriot. But to your point, if it goes 15 minutes, we are in Canada. So I wouldn't want to be laying close to minus 200 here. The pick is going to be Curtis, but yeah, not super confident here.
Yeah, this is kind of one of those fights. I gave you some really confident breakdowns for the first few fights. This isn't one that I feel great about still. And quite frankly, when I see Marc-Andre Barriot is gigantic next to the should-be welterweight Chris Curtis at the face-off, I mean, it's going to make me even want to keep on moving to the Marc-Andre Barriot side. It's just I need to go into the face-off knowing that that's going to happen. So is that a big factor for me? And honestly, with the clinch game that Barriot has, And just knowing that Chris Curtis can not only be put up against the cage, and I'm not even talking about takedowns. I'm just talking about body work, knees, ripping shots. Like, I understand that Chris Curtis can come back with that, but the only person that put Marc-Andre Barrio down was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I mean, that guy's got Bang Bang in his nickname, and he's like 6'3". Chris Curtis is like 5'10", man. Or Chitty's 6'5". I'm sorry. That dude is huge. He was 4 inches taller than Barrio. Barrio is 3 inches taller in this matchup. He's the true middleweight. And Chris Curtis, I think, is just going to be too small. I think I'm going to go with Barrio here.
Talk yourself all the way into it.
The last thing I was going to add was, I don't know if you guys saw, but I will say Chris Curtis and Sean Strickland both looked absolutely shredded. Like, they looked to be legit in the best shape that I've seen in recent memory here for this fight.
Yeah, I think Chris is going to have much more power on his shots. I just don't think that there's much sophistication to Marc-Andre Barriot's game. And when you have the coaching edge in terms of Eric Nixick, I really am always hesitant to pick against you. And that's just the way that it is. Because if you follow his shit, you're probably going to win.
That's fair. But I mean, like, come on, you couldn't beat Jack Hermanson on volume. Or moments. You couldn't beat Jack Hermanson on moments.
Well, it's a different type of wrestling and type of grappling, right? I mean,
but it was a striking match. It wasn't even a wrestling match.
I think it's part of his maturity as a fighter as well. Maturity. Part of deleting Twitter is, I think, a good thing for his mindset. Maybe whether he's a mental midget or not, that's his own qualm, but at least he's not getting distracted by that shit.
Yeah, Chris doesn't check kicks good. MMA doesn't really throw a lot of them, though. That's also fair. Yeah, all right. I still don't have the best read on this fight. I'm leaning towards Barrio for, you know, reasons. Anyways, here we go.
Of all the Canadian fighters on this card, there's only a few of them that are dogs, and that's certainly the best option you can get as a Canadian fighter.
I mean, if that's what we're handicapping now.
Yes.
All right, so we got Arnold Almighty Allen, AAA, versus Movsar Evloev, no nickname necessary. +170 for Arnold Allen, Evloev -205. Guru, why don't you go ahead and take us away?
Take me away. Movsar Evloev, undefeated in his career, undefeated in the UFC, goes without saying, without a finish as well. I'm not necessarily thinking that he's going to find one here either. Arnold Allen is one tough cookie, to say the least, and has never been finished in his career either. Just not sure that Arnold Allen has faced anybody that is a high level of grappler as Movsar Evloev. And he got outstruck by Max Holloway, because generally that's what happens when you fight Max Holloway. So as long as Movsar can continue to get the takedowns he wants, I think he's going to get them. And even if he doesn't get them at first, he's relentless. So as long as he doesn't get clipped by Mr. Almighty, should be just fine. And I took Movsar. So let's go.
If at first you don't succeed, pick yourself up and try again. Is that what you're saying Movsar's efforts are going to be like?
No.
All right, fair enough. John Kelly, what do you got on this fight?
Yeah, this is one I do like the Evloev side. Obviously, the relentless wrestling is always, like, I'm just always going to be a big fan of that style of fighters. I mean, he averages almost 5 takedowns per 15 minutes. And in the fights where he was facing a legitimate striking threat on the other side, he relied on that wrestling even more so against Hakeem Dawodu, where he got, you know, kind of rocked a couple times. He landed 9 takedowns in that fight, the Dan Ige fight, 9 takedowns as well. And then in other fights where he's not as concerned about the striking, you see him, yeah, he'll mix in the takedowns, but then he's also a competent striker as well. So I think he's just a very good fighter, bright future, 17-0. Where I get concerned is, like, and why I'm not, like, parlaying him, is Arnold Allen is a legit test for him here. Arnold Allen's probably the toughest test that he's yet to face, because Arnold Allen is good wherever the fight goes. He's got decent subs. He's powerful on the feet as well. The reason why I've always kind of talk smack about Allen. Like I had a big bet on Max Holloway in that fight. I bet Calvin Kattar when he blew out his leg. I still want to see that fight get run back. But the reason why I've kind of faded him a couple times is because he's one of those guys, despite being super technically sound, he just doesn't like, he's never going to blow you away in terms of winning minutes and winning rounds. But in a fight like this, where he's probably relying on a big moment or a finish, and he's a sizable underdog, I get the bull case for him here. Shout out to Uncle Wheezy. I saw on Twitter earlier, he mentioned Arnold Allen. I guess I'm not sure what book it was, but in Finnish only markets, he was like minus 122. I think that's a pretty good look because I think Evloev, a lot of his win equity comes by a decision. So that would be the way that I'd look to play him if I were going to play him. But this is one where I'm a sucker for the wrestling. I think Evloev could be competent and hang on the feet as long as he doesn't get hurt here. He's going to land multiple takedowns, rack up at least a little bit of control time as well, do enough to win those rounds against a low volume guy like Allen and probably get his hand raised.
I like that analysis a lot. I don't have too much to add to what you guys have put out here. But I will say that Mozar Evloev is my second best bet of the night behind Mohamed Bin Salman. I mean, Mauro Buena Silva. I got minus 170 on Mozar Evloev, and I had to pull the trigger because, quite frankly, any real wrestler that's tried to take Arnold Allen down has succeeded and has almost nearly won the fight. Now, my one play on Arnold Allen that I could put out there for you people is the plus 1,000 by guillotine, well, by submission in general, but by guillotine. I mean, Evloev puts his neck is available. It's not good sometimes, but at the same time, if you survive Nick DeCarney Lentz's guillotine and then you survive the armbar/guillotines of Diego Lopez, I think you can handle that bicep of Arnold Allen. So give me Evloev. I got minus 170 on the money line, but quite frankly, him and Myra, if you don't like playing chalk solo, those are my two best bets of the card. I bet them solo, so if one loses, I can make some money back. But for you peasants that missed the line movement I put up on BetMMA, you could just parlay them and, you know, be really greasy.
Love it.
All right. Moving on along here. But before we do the right thing, people. Please throw a like. If you haven't done so already, I'm judging you. But you can fix that. Put a like, subscribe to the channel. That is all. All right, we got Superman that, oh, we got Brad Katona versus Garrett the Mallet Armfield. Armfield is an interesting name enough, but, I mean, this guy throws mallets in the first round. It's just he's breathing heavy against Toshiomi Kazama. Goes, I've got one more chance. Takes a deep breath and comes out and throws the final combo that gets the stoppage. And then Kevin Sataki has the funniest referee stoppage.
What did I thought it was really funny, but it was a good stoppage.
Oh, no. It wasn't a bad stoppage. It's just, did you see the way he like
gets he had his fall over his
and he's then like he's hugging like caressing him on the face. It's like in Step Brothers where they're hugging each other.
Dude, he was so like, out of it. It was so funny. It was really funny.
No, but it was Kevin Sataki doing that. He wasn't out of it.
No. What?
Kevin Sataki was the one hugging Toshiomi Kazama. That's the funny
part. I know.
Part.
He was trying to like comfort him and try to chill him out.
But dude, he's such a bad athlete and a funny person that it just looked hilarious. If you check my Twitter,
I know it was really funny.
I know. I'm telling the fans, not you. You know, it's okay. Good I know Lord. You saw it. Anyways, we got Brad Superman, Soldier Boy, Katona. Here's my thoughts is that I just said it all. Garrett Armfield's got one round of cardio. Give me Superman by round two, Superman by round three, or Superman by decision. Minus 192 is probably a little too sketchy for my liking, but will I find a way to have a lower level parlay with him and someone else, round robin the fuck out of him? I'll do plenty of things like that. I just think he survived against every other good striker and high level fighter he's fought. The dude just doesn't get finished like that. And he's fought some good names too. So, listen, give me Katona here and give me him. As the fight goes on, I like his chances of finishing it better and better. I mean, that dude was nasty versus Cody Gibson, but what balls. What balls on Cody Gibson, let me tell you. Guru tried to nominate that for Fight of the Year. And I didn't like doubt him, but we had to cut it down to 5 fights and we had to cut it out. And I was like, dude, just let it go. But then I watched that shit back this week and I'm sorry, Guru. Like, you Thank were you. Right, but we did have to cut it down to 5 fights.
Of course we did. You were right too. So this is what it is.
I just want you know, but before we get, you know, too romantical out here, what's your pick on this fight?
I think it's a really, really interesting one. And it's, again, it's kind of one that scares me because I feel like Brad Katona might even be like the mush of the week because like everybody's parlaying him up and I get it because he definitely has unbelievable cardio and seems to be extremely well-rounded everywhere. And I am picking him to win, but when you look at that Cody Gibson fight, I mean, he is getting tagged a lot and Garrett Armfield could crack him. Could. He could be the first person to do it. It would. I've seen more surprising things happen. So had to put that out there, but I end up on Brad Katona and I do like it to go a little bit later, right? Maybe to like that round 2, round 3. Can Brad Katona maybe even find a finish, the decisionator? Is that possible?
I Could think if the guy that came last fight comes out, I think it's possible. Mr. Kelly, what do you got here?
Yeah, like it kind of pains me to say it, but I think Brad Katona is like, this is like relative to the price. I think it's one of the safest like parlay legs to me, honestly. Yeah. Like I think he has Armfield covered pretty much everywhere. I think Katona, and I'm not a Katona fan for what it's worth. Like I talked a bunch of smack about him going back through his first run in the UFC. I faded him with Hunter Azure. I didn't like him on an Ultimate Fighter. And then like you said, he puts on that show with Cody Gibson and I'm like, this is crazy. Like I had never seen that version of Brad Katona, but what I have seen is a dude that even prior to that fight is just very good wherever the fight goes. You know, he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's not the most physical guy, even though he is like very athletic, but he's got like those little T-Rex arms. So he's not like super imposing at distance or anything like that. But I just think he's better than Armfield legitimately everywhere this fight goes. I think he's a better striker. I think he's a better wrestler. I think he's a better grappler. And I think he certainly has better cardio. And you guys touched on that. I think after round 1, Katona is going to take over here, maybe get a finish in round 2 or 3. If not, he's getting his hand raised with the decision. So I think Katona gets it done here.
Amazing. Guru, great pulling that up because I was not going to have the visual. I have a big head and little arms. And TV also,
you said TV had sent me that in the middle of the week while scouting this fight.
Because that's the one thing that Brad Katona doesn't have in this fight is the reach advantage. Yeah. But he was giving up 2 more inches of reach in his last fight, so I'm cool with it.
I just got spooked. I just got spooked, John Kelly. I got spooked on Katona. Well, because I thought maybe it might be possible that it could be a little clipping scenario that Katona could come out and disappoint.
I mean, he's been super, super durable throughout his entire career. And he's fought guys that can crack, you know? I mean, even the Gibson fight, he took a ton of damage in there. I don't even know if he was ever, like, fully wobbled. Like, I mean, he definitely felt a few of those, but I don't know. I think he's very durable, but we'll see. I had to look it up, too. I was trying to find out if he had the shorter reach than Vanessa Demopoulos, but he's not quite got her beat.
But he's got a fight.
Did you feel like he won the Timur Valiyev fight though?
Honestly, so, I don't remember that fight. When was
that? That was on Tough. It was incredible.
Oh, that's why. I don't even know, to be honest. I barely watched the Tough season. So I went back and watched like highlights of those fights, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
I bully TB into watching, and he still generally doesn't watch.
So the final thing I have on this fight is I actually came up with the perfect nickname, but way too late. Garrett is a nice Midwestern boy from the plains. It's Garrett Greener Pastures Armfield. And after this fight, he's going to be
like
set
he's dying. Greener Pastures.
Yeah, exactly. He's done in the UFC after this fight. They're not going to bring it back. All right. Anyways. Why not? I don't know. Because he's going to be 1-2 with like 2 finish losses. But Charles,
I think he gets one more.
Yeah, he's got a contract.
We'll bet a slice of pizza. He gets one more fight after this.
Oh, I want in on that. I want a slice of pizza.
Yeah.
All right. Charles Ajoldan, Sean the Sniper Woodson. We got a great fight here. just because I think there's going to be action no matter what happens. But my prediction off of watching the tape was Charles Jourdan is going to be able to kind of emulate the early success that we see, you know, like Sean Woodson faces a ton of adversity. The guy's name escapes me in the draw, his last fight.
Luis Saldana,
two fights ago, Luis Saldana, not on my notes because I didn't write down the draw because I'm an idiot. There it is. It is in the notes, just in a different spot. I am an idiot, but I think the speed on the strikes and being able to strike with leg kicks, body kicks, head kicks, flying knees, and being able to use the hands, you know, Charles Jourdan, I think he's going to be able to be the quicker guy in exchanges. Now, the issue here is, like, his wrestling defense sucks. It's just I don't really trust Sean Woodson to really be a successful offensive wrestler. Like, taking down Dennis Bazookia, who's fighting you on, like, 2 hours' notice and is, you know, giving up 18 inches of height. I think Sean Woodson in rounds 2 and 3, yeah, he's going to just sit on top of him. But that's the least impressive win I've ever seen. Did you see what Jamal Emmers did to Dennis Bazookia? Sean Woodson, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should go sit in the corner, young man. Frankly, I just think his straight punches aren't going to be enough to disrupt Charles Jourdan kind of using some head movement, coming inside, ripping to the body, and just breaking Woodson down. The dude gets dropped like 3 times against Saldana, but the dude, Saldana also has zero fight IQ, thought he finished the fight, jumps on top of the cage, and doesn't realize that he need a downed opponent in the face. So you can't really do that, buddy.
So that fight was meme city.
Big disappointment. And it was also at altitude.
Yeah, that whole card was crazy because everybody was gassed after like 3 minutes. So it was just, like, it was wild.
Aren't these guys supposed to be technical boxers as it's round 3? And they're like, I think they're tired is what they're talking about on the broadcast. It was sketchy, but ultimately, I think Charles Jourdan has proven to have better cardio on a more consistent basis than Sean Woodson. And I think he creates more damage overall. I trust him more to be a finisher. So I got Jourdan here, but minus 205, he's going to be like one of those ones I'll include in like the lower level of confidence. If you're doing like a PRP style, he's the third or fourth, you know, layer of guys that you add to your round robins, you know. But Charles Jourdan's a pick, and I think he gets it done by finish. Maybe even submission hurts the guy. Woodson jumps in and he snatches the gilly. But realistically, just take inside the distance. Don't be too cute. If you're going to take a minus 205 on Jourdan, you better hope he's finishing the fight. So, I mean, quite frankly, that's at least the way I see it. So, Ray Torres, he's also on Jourdan. Give me the reach of Woodson, yes, but does his speed even make up, you know, the difference? No. And the shelves are non-binary.
That's fair call.
All right, fair call. Immigrant Force is pretty good. Guru, what do you got going on in life over here?
I think it's speed over size here, right? The sniper's taking too long to load his gun, and when Jourdain's gonna get inside on that, and it's gonna fuck him up.
Smoking like really a true fight. Fortnite mofo.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just going to be reloaded. He hasn't even going to get shots off.
Yeah, I don't really take too much of the wrestling hype from the last fight with Dennis Bazookia. He just took the last, whatever path he was given there to taking the trips in terms of the 5 takedowns. I don't expect him to come out and wrestle with any sort of intensity. And then you look at the fight, sure, Nathaniel Wood got a bunch of takedowns of his own on Charles Jourdan. But Charles does an unbelievable job of clawing back to the fence and working his way up to his feet. I don't see Sean Woodson as a better control grappler than Nathaniel Wood, despite whatever size or anything. I just really like Charles Jourdan to come out and put on a damn show in his home country. And I think he does. He's only been finished the one time, right? Versus Julian Arosa in that third round. Otherwise, all his losses are decisions. Sean Woodson is exhausted and was put to sleep 3 times by Luis Saldana. It's hysterical. So give me Charles Jourdan.
Yeah, I guess for the sake of a pick, I'll agree with you guys. I think it's probably Jourdan, but I'm definitely thinking this fight plays out closer than people expect. I think even where it's at now, like, there's been some pretty decent line movement towards Jourdan. Sean Woodson was like plus 145 or plus 150 just like a day or two ago. Now at the plus 170 range, I'm actually starting to get pretty tempted here because I do think Jourdain is very exciting. He's a very explosive fighter, but he's one of those guys that's usually more of a big moments fighter as opposed to a strong round winner. And we saw that kind of bite him at times, you know, Shane Burgos, even though that was kind of a robbery, but it just speaks to that he's not convincingly winning minutes. And then again, against Nathaniel Wood, I was on Nathaniel Wood there for a lot of those same reasons. And Wood was able to not just, you know, land the five trip takedowns or whatever, but also outstrike him at distance. And I think there at least is an argument that Sean Woodson could be competitive at space here, could have just as much success as Jourdain. And if you believe that he's added that element of wrestling, I know it sounds like you guys don't, but this is a guy that has been working on his grappling. We saw going back a couple fights, like he had a couple submission attempts, I think, in the Yusuf Zalil fight. He did again in the Saldana fight. I think there was one other. I'm not sure if it was in the Bazookian fight, but I thought there was one other one as well. Obviously, he landed the four takedowns there. But this is a guy that's super long for the division. He's a good boxer as well. So I just think this is going to be a lot more competitive than I think these like minus 205 suggest. So I kind of view this similar to the Chris Curtis fight where I still probably lean Jourdain, but I think around the minus 200, you're getting a little too confident for my liking is I guess my point. But in front of the home Canadian crowd, he lands a big knee or a big shot, something like that, they're going to go absolutely wild. So he probably gets his hand raised.
Oh, yeah. Missed the money line completely. And that's kind of similar to another fight we were talking about earlier, like Chris Curtis or other fights like that, where definitely opened up closer. And if you got in earlier, you could feel better about it. But, yeah, minus 205 at this point for Charles Jourdain, I don't love it. Now, what is interesting, given the analysis of Mr. John Kelly here assisting in this process, is that Sean Woodson by submission is plus 2,000. And I actually like that better than his odds to win by knockout. I've never seen Charles Jourdain knocked out, but I've seen him submitted before. So yeah, could Sean Woodson get that dumb buggy choke and somehow tap out Charles Jourdain or something like that? And like, and it would be the stupidest thing, but no, to bro, your point, he has some attempts.
No, come on, man. It's sub attempts is different, man. If he has one sub finish in his entire career, I just don't see it. He's a decisionator through and through.
Well, yeah. My point is, I like him. His chances of a submission win, better than a knockout.
I don't.
Well, just because I think there's a 0.0% chance he knocks out Jourdain.
Yeah, no, I just don't. I don't think he finishes Jourdain at all. I think that's where the major equity is. I think if it's go, and I also don't even necessarily like a decision either. I don't know that he has the cardio advantage.
What's fight goes the distance?
Fight goes the distance is a good question. Let's see.
Probably like minus 120.
My app resets.
I'm interested.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Minus 125 bet online.
Yeah, minus 135 DraftKings.
Yeah. Yeah, but compared to over 2.5 and minus 145, I'd just do that.
All right.
Interesting. Because maybe Jourdain doesn't have quite the same finish equity that, like, I mean, I don't know. But then again, it's just you see Sean Woodson actually.
I just feel like the Luis Saldana fight is so similar to the Charles Jourdain fight. I mean, Charles is a little smaller, but I think he's a little better. So does that not help it out?
Well, So ultimately, like I said earlier about other fights that were priced similarly, if you're taking Charles Jourdain, you might as well just do like a Jourdain inside the distance.
Yeah, I like that. That's a nice. I'd way much to prefer cut a minus that. 200. I think it's a nice way to cut a minus 200 to something with plus money. You're going to get Charles Jourdain by finish at plus 165 on DraftKings.
Yeah, I would like that better than the money line, just because if it's going decision, like John said, it's going to be way too close for your liking. So, all right, we got Sergey City versus Ramon Tavares.
The rematch that everybody is clamoring for.
Okay, can we channel the Don? John Kelly, let's get your breakdown on this one first. Let's see, what do we got in this matchup? Sergey City minus 180, Ramon Tavares plus 150, the Savage. Oh, the Don, he's here. Don Kelly, what do you got on this fight?
Yeah, you know, I thought you guys might call on me. I had my my guy Don here ready. He was sitting over on the couch taping some more Contender Series. For you guys that don't remember, these two actually squared off on Contender Series. It was back in week 5. Don does a lot of work on Contender Series on his YouTube channel. But the funny thing is the first time they fought, I picked Tavares. I bet Tavares at plus 175. Picked him to win. I thought he looked good, to be honest with you, prior to the early stoppage. Yes, it was a crazy stoppage, whatever. But I think while the fight plays out at range, I think you have to favor Tavares here. That's the one thing that Tavares is very good at. He is a very good slick boxer. He works the body well. And you saw in that first fight, every time CD threw a kick, which he's got a bunch of powerful kicks, he's going to throw a lot of them. Every time he threw them, Tavares punished him with a 1-2 every single time, and it landed every single time. Like, his hands are fast. He can get through the guard of CD here. Where I worry about Tavares is now we're getting a worse price, obviously. It's like plus 145, plus 150. Now he's like kind of like the trendy dog pick. People saw him come back on Contender Series, beat Cortavious by knockout. So I think he's definitely like a popular dog, which kind of worries me. But also, I don't think he's super durable. Like, I know City didn't knock him out. He was fully coherent, defending, bad stoppage. Totally agree. But I also think Tavares is a little bit chinny. Like, he still got dropped. He was knocked out previously on the regional scene by a head kick as well. And he didn't face really any competition on the regional scene, mind you. So this is a guy who is very exciting because he's a slick boxer. He has power. He's got some devastating kicks as well. But I think there are concerns with the durability. I think better grapplers will be able to take advantage of him here. I don't think City is going to be that guy because, as we saw in the first fight, the two or three times where he attempted like these half-hearted takedowns, like, Tavares easily shut them off. So I don't think City, even though he's the more well-rounded fighter, I don't think it's really going to play that much of a factor because I'm not sure he's going to be able to get Tavares down unless Tavares gasses out, which is in play, but that would then you'd have to expect the fight to go later. But I keep going back to, I think this fight plays out more at space, and I think Tavares is the better boxer. So if he can avoid getting dropped again, I'm going to side with him as the underdog here. I do lean over 1.5 rounds. I think it's like minus 120. That could be a potential play for me. I actually haven't bet anything yet this week, but that might be on my card. Oh, I see you guys have it up minus 115. So even better. But yeah, so that's my breakdown is even though we saw it once for about 5 minutes, not really anything from my original analysis changed. I still think Tavares, if anything, I got more confident seeing those 5 minutes because Tavares is the better striker. And I do think he's going to have success while the fight plays out at range. He's just got to not get dropped basically and have Mike McDonald step in there and stop it early. But yeah, we're going with the dog in Tavares.
Damn. I definitely don't want to step against Don because Don is a sharp mofo, but I'm very interested to see if, and it's exactly what you said, Don, it's that is City's well-roundedness, how well-rounded he is, because he is unbelievably well-rounded. Will that actually end up being a factor or not? Can he, right? Because for those first four minutes or so that the fight goes on, Tavares is, the pace is very similar, but Tavares is outlanding him and they're more impactful. So he's kind of winning the round. He is winning the round. Until of course he gets dropped. The problem is, and it's exactly what you said, I'm so concerned with the level of competition that he faced. He faced James Dunn before facing City. James Dunn is 5-5 in that main event, gets dropped 3 times in the first round. Before that, he's facing Charles the Felon Barnett, who we all love and know. He is 30-41. He gets touched on the temple and crumbles over cartoon style. City is just, he's been training for 5 rounds, 5 straight fights. He's even gone 5 rounds. He has a 4th round knockout, right? His only loss is to Matteo Vogel, who's really good, had the really close Contender Series fight that some people argued maybe he could have won or should have won. So he's actually fighting this weekend on United MMA for looking for a fight Dana White. So that's super interesting as well. But I'm just thinking that unless you're taking Ramon round one to get it done, I how can you be confident in his cardio if he hasn't gone there at all? I'm thinking that well-roundedness is exactly what's going to come into play, especially if you like the over 1.5. Because if it's getting over 1.5, he's in unfamiliar territory with a guy that's better cardio and more well-rounded and is willing to grapple if he does somehow get hurt.
Yeah, those are all fair points. Don, just wanted to hop in again real quick, just to speak to City, like, because we mentioned the level of competition. I didn't really touch on him too much. You mentioned his only loss came against Mateus Vogel. That's correct. But Mateus Vogel was also the best dude that he fought on the regional scene. He fought in BFL, which is the low-level Canadian promotion. He's a Canada guy. He's going to have a huge home crowd behind him. But this is another spot where I think people are getting more confident than they should be. CD was like, you know, a lot of these fighters, they have athletic background, stuff like that. Like, he was basically just like an overweight kid that got bullied or something and then just started training. Like, it's very, I don't know, man. I don't think he has as big of a ceiling as a lot of people kind of expect him to. And now he's pushing minus 200 in his UFC debut. I don't know, man. I like the dog here, even if he's going to be a trendy dog.
Yeah, I thought watching the first fight back that it was way closer and that Tavares was controlling the majority of the striking exchanges. But that step back 1-2 was super nice. The stoppage was egregious. One of the worst early stoppages I've seen. You know, I generally see a bad stoppage because it's late. That was a really, really bad stoppage because it was early. But aside from that, I mean, Tavares just seems like the cleaner, more comfortable guy in exchanges, but he's also way too comfortable with getting hit. And if this fight does go to the over, which that's actually my best bet for this fight, is the over 1.5 at minus 115, or even the fights that start around 3 at plus money, I feel like we're going to see, you know, City is going to respect the striking of Tavares like he did in the first fight. But I think this fight, Tavares respects the striking of City a little bit more than he did in the first fight. He's a willing counter striker, but at the same time, overextending on your combination and counter leads to you, in turn, being countered. So I think they pitter-patter a bit. Finish comes, if it comes, could be like a late round two, early round three type of deal this time. Maybe a little bit more tentative game plan. We're talking about a bigger octagon instead of the apex cage. So I think that plays a big factor in the over as well. So I'm going to pick City as my official pick here, because if this does go over 1.5, I think he's able to put on the wrestling as the fight goes on towards round 2 and 3. But I think early, as we saw, you know, Tavares is going to be able to stuff those takedowns. But this time, if he gets knocked down and they let him die and go out on a shield, I mean, doesn't City just ride the rest of round 1 with top control if the last fight goes the way it did? And then after that, after he rides out the rest of round 1 in top control, wouldn't he then, you know, have more success getting takedowns in the future after that? So I was initially kind of leaning towards the idea of Tavares, and I did pick him on the Contender Series fight. But kind of seeing that he probably hasn't improved his defense. So, yeah, I got to take City here as the official pick, and we're moving on. So
what? You just did a full 360.
How? I talked about the ways that Tavares wins on the feet, that my favorite bet for the fight was over 1.5, and that City's my official pick.
All right. So there you go. Sounds good.
And it took me 3 minutes. I let you go first this time, too. You're just not used to that. Jillian Robertson, the savage, smoking a joint on the couch. Pollyanna Viana, Dama DeFerro, not doing butt stuff with Colby Covington. Minus 285 on Jillian Robertson. It's getting kind of sketchy. Pollyanna Viana plus 230. I still can't take Pollyanna Viana. I'm sorry. Jillian Robertson by submission. And as the fight goes on, I can't imagine Viana is going to be any more willing to stuff takedowns. What, she's got a 0%? 0% takedown defense? Is that still the case? I mean, I know it's bad. All right, I'm sorry, 44%. But what, she's also faced like some of the absolute worst fighters. So it just feels like a stiff breeze could take down Pollyanna Viana, and her armbar from guard probably just doesn't work on Jillian Robertson. You have to hurt her on the feet, which if Viana actually stays on the feet and strikes and can stuff the takedowns, okay, maybe it looks a little sketchy, but I can't predict that. She loves playing guard. So, Guru, what do you got here?
No, absolutely. I'm not sure that Viana is going to be able to stuff takedowns. Jillian Robinson's taken another 6 months off. She gets healthy. She continues to work on her game at Goat Shed, which is a good gym. Small, but good. And, yeah, I like her in this spot. I think that she's going to get the job done. I know she was really excited to be on the Canadian card as a Canadian herself. And I think she finds a sub in round two or three, honestly. Honestly, I actually like round one or two more than round two or three. I think she's going to get there right away. She's going to go for it, and I'm not sure that Pollyanna's done anything to be able to stop it. She's busy cosplaying and doing whatever she's got to do on Instagram, being, you know, gaming, being fairly popular. Yeah, listen, she's doing a lot at Shuto Box, so I don't want to take too much away from her. She's got some great training partners there, but I'm not sure how serious she takes it. So I like Jillian to get it done. If she somehow can keep it on the feet, it's danger. Oh, it's danger, because Jillian still can't strike. So Jillian should get it there.
I'd like to say you can't take Jillian minus 285. You can take Jillian by submission and round props.
Yes. Agreed. John, what do you
think? John Kelly, do you agree?
I do totally agree. The only thing I'd say is I think maybe a ground and pound TKO could be possible too. So don't rule that out. But yeah, I totally agree. I don't have much to add here. I think Viana, you know, there's probably people like, oh, value on Viana here. Like, I don't see it, man. Like, she just plays guard way too much. I love fading her, especially against fighters that I expect to land takedowns here and control her in top position. And that's what I expect from Jillian Robertson here. You mentioned the striking. Viana's clearly a better striker, but she's going to gift the takedowns just to play jiu-jitsu off her back here. And like you said, I think Jillian in top position is a lot harder to sub than some of these other people that Viana was able to sub in the past. I don't think she does it here. So Robertson, probably inside the distance, probably submission. I'll say round two.
I will say that you could probably get more value on Pollyanna Viana's OnlyFans than you can on plus 230 money line. All right, so we're going to move on. We've got...
You know, Johan, you know that from personal experience?
No, I was taking a guess. And I'll send you the link later. All right, we got Johan the White Lion Lioness. Yes! Oh, fuck. Oh, damn it. Johan the White Lion Lioness versus, wait, the Lioness or the Lion? I'm
Lion.
Yeah, but what? His last name, he's like a lioness, but
yeah, kind of, but it's
Lane. Oh, no. I got hung up.
I think it's Lanus.
Yeah, it's like anus. More like that. Yeah. Oh, you would know about that. Versus Sam the Patriot Patterson. He's not even American, but it just fits so well.
Fuck is the Patriot?
Yeah, I see. This is a TV nickname.
You just think it fits well because it's an alliteration? It does.
Exactly. Well, it did. I had you fooled for at least 0.25 seconds.
You didn't.
Damn. All right, so... Ultimately, my actual handicapping on this fight is that Sam Patterson's striking defense is literally handicapped. I know that Johan Lioness hasn't thrown with a lot of volume recently, but the dude still has, like, knockout power, and he's not facing Mike Malott this time. But, I mean, have you seen Sam Patterson's striking defense? Because I haven't.
No, it's nowhere to be found. It's Weston Wilson-level striking defense. It's poor. It's Swiss cheese. It's bad. It's really bad.
Is doing this like striking defense?
No,
it's not.
I just think that Johan is actually like throwing in slow motion most of the time. And I think Patterson's going to be able to roll with it.
I mean, most of the time are his last two fights after getting finished, right?
We had one finish versus Gabe Green in round two after he got sleepy. And then he had a terrible fight with Darian Weeks, which was, again, terrible. And then...
And a robbery.
Yeah, probably.
That's fair. That's fair.
And then he gets the loss to Mike Malott, which like he can't stop any takedowns. My point is if he doesn't knock out Sam Patterson in round one, and I mean probably the first 3 or 4 minutes, like Sam could grapple too. So he can easily get to choke him out. Anything's if it gets to round two, anything's possible. So I just kind of lean dog because it's just like Johan at -150 is terrible. I was excited. I was hoping we could get Johan as a dog, but that never existed.
Yeah, but Sam Patterson coming off like one of the worst knockout losses in the UFC last year. You think he's going to come out aggressive?
I
think moving up 15 pounds isn't like
aggressive isn't even necessarily his style. He's like a bladed kickboxer. He wants to get in there and then he wants to, you know, start grappling.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets in there, it's going to be trouble in my mind.
It's fair. There's probably a fair amount of danger there.
Like, you can't fade shit with shit.
I just think that, yeah, that's a good point. I just feel like the danger's early. So, I don't know. I feel like it's dog or pass.
We've seen Johan win other than disgusting three-round decisions because the three strikes that he landed at distance were much better.
No, but Darian Weeks was actually kind of tough. Like,
well, Darian Weeks has a chin. Sam Patterson doesn't.
Right. Well, so I just feel like he's going to get, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, he's been knocked out not only in the UFC loss he has, but before that, too, his other losses by knockout, too. John Kelly, what do you think?
Yeah, so we were a little chalky on my end in the pay-per-view. The prelims is kind of where I have the spicier takes here. And this one, I'm pretty convicted. I think it's Sam Patterson here. I fully acknowledge Lyness having big power, and that's certainly his win condition. He can clip Patterson early. You mentioned Patterson coming off a brutal knockout against Ashmoose. That was ridiculous.
Was Bobby it was like Jalen Turner level.
5 minutes later, and he still like couldn't get his legs under him, thought he was still fighting. They're all like his coaches are trying to explain what just happened. So it was a pretty scary knockout. But in terms of the matchup, like I basically don't think Johan Lyness should be a favorite against almost anybody. And I know Patterson's moving up a weight class, but he was massive for 155. So, you know, we'll see if, you know, keep an eye on weigh-ins if he's been able to fill out that frame a little bit better at 170. He's a younger guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't look out of position in the new weight class. But in terms of the matchup, though, like I mentioned, Lyness, he can knock him out in round one, certainly. Patterson, you mentioned, he's got that tall man defense. He gets clipped a lot, and he doesn't have the best durability. Outside of that, I think this is Patterson all day. Patterson's a good striker as well. Patterson is probably going to be throwing more volume than Lyness. Lyness is a guy who winds up, throws everything into his shots, and that's why he's not throwing that often. And every single one of his fights that get out of the first round, he's completely gassed at the 6 minute mark, 7 minute mark, looking up at the clock, sucking wind, just not even looking to engage because he's so tired. And then when he is throwing, it's a lot more telegraphed. It's a lot more looping. It's much easier to defend because he's so tired. And then you talk about the defensive grappling. It's just not there. The dude's a fish out of water. If you put him on his back, he has basically no submission defense. Patterson's a guy that's finished 4 fights by guillotine choke alone. He's actually got, when I taped him on Contender Series, I bet against him because the guy he fought, Sensei, was a big dog, like plus 200. But one of the only good qualities that I had found about Patterson is his submission chokes. He's got very good chokes. And I think a guy like Lyness, who has shot takedowns when he's tired, who has looked to clinch as well. And I just don't even expect Lyness to be winning the striking outside of round one. So it's like this dude basically can only win by an early knockout in my book. And at minus 150, it just doesn't make sense. I think this is a clear buy low spot on Patterson because you're basically never going to get him. Like the market's never going to be lower on this dude. And 2 fights ago, he was a big, you know, guy that they wanted to pump on Contender Series as this big chalky favorite. So it's just like, I think it's a clear buy low spot here. Lyness, it just doesn't do it for me, man. So I like Patterson here. I think there's value on the money line now, but I think that Canadian steam might make it even more value come Saturday.
Thank you. That's exactly what I saw when he faced Mike Malott. He gave up the takedown so easily. Sam Patterson, unless he literally gets put to sleep, you know, Ashmoo style, like, he's going to start looking for it. So I think, especially as the fight starts to play out, got to go Sam Patterson.
I am not betting Johan Linus money line. That would mean that I am not a smart person. But what I will do is take Johan Linus by round one or round two finish. And I'll wash my hands and call it a day. Official pick Linus.
I was just going to add to your point, like, if you like him, take the knockout in round one. And then if you want, like, the safest way to do it, if you want to take the concern of Patterson's chin away, you play Linus a round one KO. And if the fight gets to round two, you hop on Patterson live.
That's it. I'll be watching.
The price.
Me and Guru will be watching. Look out. First one together this year.
I may take a stab at that over 1.5 just because I like it.
All right. We got DJ Jazzy Jazz, Jasmine Jazz Davisius versus the Zombie Girl, the Eye Poker, the Fence Grabber, the Clam Kicker, Priscilla Cachueta. Minus 375, DJ Jazzy Jazz. Plus 295, Priscilla Cachoeira. I got DJ Jazzy Jazz. It doesn't take a genius to know that anyone with any semblance of any takedown offense will control and potentially finish Cachoeira. That's where I just don't trust Jasmine. You're telling me she's going to find a finish? I'm telling you I don't believe you. So I'll take Jasmine. I'll take her, like, Jasmine and over 1.5. Like, Priscilla is kind of tough to submit because she's willing to do whatever it takes to get out of submission attempts. Did it always work? No, but it'll buy her some time. I think we're getting to an over 1.5. The problem is they're giving us an over 2.5. The problem is they're giving us Jasmine minus 375. So you parlay the Jasmine Jazz Davisius to land one takedown and over 5 minutes. And I'm sure you got a John Kelly same game parlay special.
Oh my. You're gonna just put his official stamp of approval on it?
I approve. I said
it could be a special.
I approve. Done.
He's already in. Do we know? We don't know. We don't have a line on that yet. Fair enough. But hopefully we do eventually.
Yeah. Sometimes the prelims, they don't even bother giving you the option on some of the same game, which sucks because that's usually where the biggest edges are on the prelims, in my opinion. But it is what it is.
Yeah, certainly an interesting one. I just if Cachoeira, if Cachabeating can somehow keep this fight standing, because she does have decent initial takedown defense, because she's athletic and, like you say, TB, willing to do whatever it takes, claw, bite, whatever. it could get really ugly because she fires at will in on the feet. But Jasmine should get it to the ground at home here. I mean, if you don't know, she's got Olympic wrestling pedigree there. So she doesn't, but she doesn't, by the way.
Shout out last time Jazzy fought. Check out
exactly.
Inside joke.
So she's got decent wrestling and she should be able to get it to the ground. But if she somehow isn't able to, boy, howdy, does minus 375 look bad. So maybe don't put her in your parlay.
John.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add here. I think Jasmine gets it done here. I think multiple takedowns, control time. She's not a bad striker either. You know, she's kind of has a little bit of a boxing background. I wouldn't feel comfortable if she stayed on the feet here with Cachoeira, giving her only chance to win. But I just think Cachoeira is a zero on the mat. Once you get her down, she's got no get-up games, no submissions. So it's going to be all DJ Jazzy Jazz once she gets her down there. And in front of that Canadian crowd, I wouldn't even be surprised if she chased the finish here. But I think she gets her hand raised.
Yeah, I like it. She doesn't have an Olympic wrestling background. What she does have is a background as an MC.
And I like that. I like the KO prop, hopefully. Hopefully that's a good number because I actually like her by KO more than the submission.
Yeah, the ground and pound, baby.
Ground and pound, exactly. And as far as nickname goes, I actually like this nickname because Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is probably one of my top three favorite shows of all time. So
let's go. I knew you would approve of this because I used it the other time you liked it. This is legit. Now we got Malcolm X Gordon versus Jimmy the Brick Flick. Listen, I didn't choose the nickname, but I took the liberties of choosing the photo. This is the best one I could find of Malcolm Gordon.
I don't think Malcolm would be proud, either one.
Jesus. Well, they never gave us his last name, so it's Malcolm X Gordon. Is he going to wear the glasses in the octagon, or does he have to change the goggles?
Detroit Red.
All right, so Malcolm Gordon here. No, I did not put his actual picture on the next slide. We're sticking with this. Minus 205. Are we on crack? What is happening in this economy? What is it? Is this James Krause? James, if you're out there, please talk to me, because what the fuck is going on? What do you know about Jimmy the Brick Flick? Was it because he posted the John Kelly, you could give us the best context possible. What did Jimmy Flick look like? You posted about this, and I think you moved the line.
With the drunk uncle pick?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God. No, I mean, let's be honest. This is not the work of the infamous James Krause. He's got the FBI so far up his behind, he can't even sit straight. So there's no way that he made a move like this with all the stuff he has going on. So that's not what this is, but it is concerning, because I don't know who is dropping hammers on Malcolm Gordon, but I couldn't disagree more. I know this is similar to Patterson, where I think this is one of the lowest points the market is going to be on a fighter in Jimmy Flick. And this is really a good matchup for him, to be honest with you. Like, I actually think he's the better wrestler in this matchup. He's got underrated wrestling. We saw that on Contender Series. He wrestled in high school as well at a high level. He's got good entries on his takedown, strong double leg as well. Malcolm Gordon, yes, he's a black belt too, but Jimmy Flick's a way better submission grappler. I give Flip all of the submission upside in this fight. I also think Flick, the concern is him getting knocked out. That's not really a concern against Malcolm Gordon here. And Malcolm Gordon is arguably just as liable to get knocked out. They've both been knocked out a bunch. Gordon's also been hurt to the body as well. He gets super sloppy in grappling exchanges, and he's been submitted multiple times as well. Like, I trust Jimmy Flick to fight for my money more. I think this is the most serious Flick has taken a training camp. You look at his previous fights, like, he's not posting anything. Look at his Instagram for this fight. I mean, this is a dude that's literally fighting for his job, who's posting every day that he's two-a-days, running 5 miles after practice. Like, he talked about in interviews how he's starving. He's fighting for his family. He's fighting for his job. This is a dude that's not going to quit. And if we don't have to really worry about him getting knocked out as much here, and we expect them there to be a lot of grappling exchanges, why wouldn't you take the better grappler, who I think is also the better wrestler as well, but the much better submission grappler, at plus 170 now to Malcolm Gordon, bro? Malcolm Gordon, really? That's what we're doing here? I don't know. If something's like sketchy happens, then it is what it is. But I'll be donating to Jimmy the Brick Flick this weekend for sure.
I don't think you know. Shout out to
Kiwi Brew, yes, for the amazing donation, because absolutely, he's donating to Grandma's couch cushions so that we can place a bet on Jimmy Flick by submission.
Yes. There you go. That's what I want. I know. I don't want it by submission. I want it by finish.
By finish. Yeah, yes. Fair enough. So go ahead, Guru.
No, I really do like Jimmy Flick in this spot. I mean, you watch this wrestling clip I posted on my feed. Go check that out. Malcolm Gordon is not good enough at all to be really favored by against anybody in the UFC. Same thing as we were saying about Johan Lioness. Jimmy the Brick Flick, I just feel like he's not necessarily more durable than Malcolm Gordon, but he feels like he is. And that's enough for me. Like, he is a junkyard dog, and Malcolm will just make terrible mistake after terrible mistakes. And I just don't think you're submitting Jimmy Flick, but you can sure as hell submit Malcolm Gordon. And I actually think that Jimmy Flick just might even fall into a knockout. Like, why the hell not? So I'm hoping they give me like a +1,000, something crazy, because he doesn't have any. And I hope they make a mistake. So I'm looking for that. So give me Jimmy Flick just because, for the memes. Like, open up the card with a little disappointment for the Canadians. So why not? Because the last time, let's just be fair, at UFC 289, last time they were in the Rogers Center, Rogers Arena, Canadians went undefeated 5-0.
I will say the other thing that's interesting, the only thing I have to add, is that Jimmy Flick has only ever been finished by knockout, whereas Malcolm Gordon's been finished by knockout and submission and by triangle. this time by Flying Triangle. All right, that's about all. Appreciate all you guys so much. Amazing chat. Kiwi Brew sending out the donations. Sure, brother. I want to say Mushroom MMA, thank you for forgetting Guru at first and saying what's up to me twice. Made me feel really good. And yeah, let's you know, James Krause it up, baby. Let's beat his line movement and we'll go ahead and take Jimmy the Brick Flick, your 45-year-old uncle at the barbecue. Appreciate everybody in the chat. Keep doing your thing. Had an amazing time as always. I'm gonna be hopping on a panel after this. Blood Money is hopping on with me to join Couch Warrior and 138 MMA, also known as, he's Tyler too, so it's going to be T-squared in the building over there. Make sure you check that show out. So, John, before I pass it off to the guru for his amazing closing words, as always, what do you have to say for yourself? Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, just wanted to say thanks as always, boys, for having me on. Always a good time catching up with you guys, talking fights, talking pizza, and listening to all the creative nicknames as well. But no, it's always a good laugh and some good analysis as well. So super excited to link back up in AC hopefully here in a couple months.
Yeah, I got the room booked. So just waiting for them tickets to drop, and we're definitely going to be in AC regardless of whatever fights they happen to put on that card, because that card has kind of started to fill out and yikes. But hey, we're going to get drunk and we'll hit the casino or something. We'll do something fun.
There you go.
Unbelievable. Guys, thanks so much in the chat for being here. Thanks so much for all the listeners. Please like, share, subscribe, do all the things that you're supposed to do. We really appreciate that. Make sure you follow my unbelievable co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on X, Instagram, Picket, Verdict, Tapology, and Bet MMA. You can follow me, the Guru, Guru Scouting MMA, in those exact same places. I'm going to have TB after the show. I'm going to have him put up the official record for last week on chroniccombat.com, because I like to crack the whip and make him do things. Thanks so much again for tuning in. We will not be back next week, unfortunately, because there's no card. Terrible. Give us a break. So we come back in 2 weeks for who we got? We got Dalidze and Imavov. That's a really interesting matchup back in the Apex, because, you know, that's where we love to be, at the Apex. Yeah, excellent. Maybe.